This podcast is part of the Gunna Geek Network. The opinions expressed may not represent other podcasts or affiliates of Gunna Geek. Check out more podcasts at GunnaGeek.com and get ready because geekness starts in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Gallifrey Public Radio, a podcast dedicated to everything Doctor Who. Join us each week for discussions ranging from Hartnell to Capaldi. I'm your host, Jay Whitten.
I prefer to jazzercise my demons, but yeah.
And my co-host, Haley Malley.
That line you're worrying about crossing. Look behind you.
And Keir Hansen.
Gallifrey Public Radio. Now we have maths.
Spoilers.
We will be discussing news and rumors, as well as episodes that have already aired. But if we get into anything too serious, don't worry. We'll warn you again.
Welcome to episode 102 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where we emphatically deny the existence of a clearly fictitious hero. Come face to face with said hero, spend the next 30 minutes arguing with said hero, and ultimately realize how similar we really were all along. Ha ha! Ha ha! Ha ha! Ha ha! Hell. Back in the GPR studios this evening, I am Keir. With me is the ever unavoidable Jay. Good evening, Jay. How are you, sir?
I'm doing all right. How are you doing?
You know, it's good to be back. And over there in the corner, so with supporting laughing mockery and such, is Haley. Haley, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good.
Good. What do we got this week?
This week we discussed the third episode in series 8 and the first Let's Go on an Adventure ep. For Peter Capaldi's Doctor, Robot of Sherwood. From the themes of heroism and legend to a nearly classic Whovian encapsulated adventure story full of swordplay and science-ish elements, this anticipated episode packed a lot of past story references, quick dialogue, and more character development for both the Doctor and Clara.
Yeah, this one, I mean, that we were kind of highly anticipating this one. You know, this is one of the first ones that we saw production photos from where... You know, the constant question of, is it really Robin Hood? Is it not really Robin Hood? And, you know, they carry that question through the first half of the episode, well, almost to the end, really.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this there was a lot of high hopes for this one.
Yeah. And it delivered on a lot of points. There's a lot of folks out there who, in reflection, post-airing are really pleased with it. Both people who have never seen anything pre-2005 and people who, really consider themselves steeped in the classic era Doctors, and episodes, you know, because it has elements of it that really can cater to both. You know, Julie and I, as we were going through one of the rewatches this weekend, I kind of looked at it and said, you know, this is one that you could show to people and say, you know, you're still learning about the show right now. You know, you might not have gotten yourself completely versed in it. You may still be, oh, I'm still halfway through Tenet or something like that. And, you know, and they're starting to get introduced and they're saying, oh, but how's this new guy doing? You know, you could easily drop this one down in front of somebody and say, here, you know, just want to get an idea of what they're doing with the newest Doctor. Here's a take on it, you know, and not have to worry about it having a huge impact on over arcs. And we'll get to the one little tiny reference that they made to the
Promised Land or
Promised Land arc that they've been laying out. But yeah, it's a good little canned episode, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It definitely, you can sit down and watch this regardless of whatever else is going on and have fun with it. Yeah, there were a lot of moments that were really, really fun. And then, you know, some that really rang true with a lot of classic Whovians. Part of the reason for that being is that this is just a brand new skin on the Time Warrior.
Okay. Well, let's put that out there. Because this is one that, you know, if anything's going to rankle anybody, I read a couple of interesting articles where folks were saying that they loved the fact that it was a send up, or maybe not necessarily a send up, but a sort of a culmination of some classic episodes that you could tell that Gatiss was a big fan of at the time he started penning this. The Time Warrior reference, for those who are not terribly familiar, this is one of the few episodes that you can get access to on Netflix. Correct me if I'm wrong. This is one of the classics on there?
No, this one's not on Netflix. I believe it is on Amazon streaming, though.
Okay. All right. So we're talking Pertwee here. We're talking the first appearance of Sarah Jane. It is a history travel episode where we go back and we're dealing with a Centauran. That has gone back to medieval England and finds a local bandit and arms him with all of these firearms and a robotic knight that well out of the time period. And the bandit wants to use all this new technology in order to conquer a neighboring castle, but Pertwee and Sarah Jane show up and kind of foil those plans. There's also elements of a Fifth Doctor episode called The King's Demons, where Fifth Doctor ends up going to a British castle in 1215, where King John is in the process of beating up on the local nobility for to get funding for the Crusades. And then there's a Fourth Doctor episode called The Androids of Tara, which had to do, it wasn't necessarily going back into Earth history, but they went on a planet that was still in a sort of a feudal state, but suddenly they're using crossbows that have explosive bolts, and there are androids running them around. So there are, a lot of elements here that you could tell that Gatiss said, oh, this is a good formula for people who enjoy kind of the classic romp. So this is go with what works, play to your strengths. Some people didn't like that. Some people said, well, couldn't you come up with a new spin? But at least this one has that theme of heroism, legend and myth versus, a true hero versus a storybook hero that runs, it threads all the way through. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure whether we get any real conclusion on it because it's still left a little unresolved, even down to the last few seconds.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things that kind of leaves you chewing on it a bit.
Yeah, I mean, there's no clear, this is exactly what happened explanation. The closest that we get is Robin at the very end is like, do people really forget about me? Do they forget that I'm an actual man and just think of me as a legend? And the Doctor's like, I'm afraid so, yeah. And he's like, okay, good. That's better. And so it's...
Yeah. So yeah. Calling history a burden.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting take. Gatiss, when he wants to write clever, is very adept at it. You can tell where some of his influences come into some of the Sherlock episodes and things of that sort. Because he enjoys wordplay, and things of that sort. So you can tell when he hits his strides. One of the moments, Haley, you said you were particularly fond of, I was real keen on it too, it wasn't necessarily, I wouldn't call it an interrogation scene, but Clara's scene in the sheriff's chambers.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It's really hitting home the fact that Clara is a much stronger character this season than she was last season, and I'm really enjoying her very much.
Yeah. I think getting her away from, I've been meaning to ask you to this, but I had, since not being on the cast last week and all, I didn't get a chance to. But it was really starting to come to mind as I'm seeing more and more of these moments from her in Series 8. Do you think that she was sort of eclipsed by some of Matt Smith's grandiose nature throughout, and maybe she would have had the opportunity all along if he didn't choose scenery the way he does?
I was kind of thinking about her character last season, and I haven't rewatched it since it came on, but it just, her writing was so inconsistent. Like, you get her in The Snowman, you get Victorian Clara in The Snowman, and she's a really strong character, she's interesting, and then she's clever, and then you get her in The Bells of St. John, and she can't figure out how to get onto the Wi-Fi, and it's just, like, she was completely different characters depending on what the episode was.
Yeah, that's the feeling I had too, is like when you had someone that understood the character when they were writing to her strengths, she was great. But it was so spotty with that happening that it was, you couldn't really say whether or not she was really holding it. And cause, I mean, you did have episodes where she was doing really great, where she was taking control of an army or whatever. And then you had other episodes where it's clear, okay, she's the damsel in distress this episode.
Right, right. Well, then I think this kind of goes along with, we were sort of discussing amongst ourselves that it's almost as if Moffat is a little more cognizant of some of the very specific criticisms that he's been receiving over the last couple of seasons and is systematically going through and starting to tighten some of those threads. Yeah. Oh, okay. Well,
just
you were
printing
saying,
it like a checklist.
Yeah.
Got that one taken care of. Got that one.
Exactly. Oh, I'm not killing enough characters. Boop, boop, boop. Okay. Clara needs to be more consistent so that you can learn to love her. Boop, boop, boop. Okay. You know, so here's one thing that I want to put out there, and I'm still not completely convinced on it, but it's, this runs throughout the episode from I would want to say right after the opening credits roll to the moment the closing credits begin to roll, and that is the Doctor's persona. You know, we're saying that Clara is starting to get filled out. You know, Clara is starting to develop. No, that doesn't work either. Clara's a better character. Yeah. That's the word I want. But I'm concerned about what's going on with Capaldi's Doctor in this episode specifically. And I want to know if I'm the only one. The word that kept coming to mind was curmudgeon.
You know, I kind of got that feeling too. Like it, I couldn't tell if it was just the episode or if it was his performance or not, but he did seem very like a lot more just generally bad natured. It wasn't that there was anything specific. He just had a huge chip on his shoulder against Robin for some reason. You know, I mean, at first it's because, okay, I don't believe that you're really who you are. And he spends a lot of time trying to, but it seemed like you're so focused on not liking him that you're forgetting to check whether or not he is who he is.
Well, referring to, you know, questioning everything, I have no problem with that.
Yeah.
You know, the whole idea, you know, that whole bit where he's going around and he's trying to, you know, run scientific tests on all the Merry Men. Great scenes. Just so much fun. But throughout, there are these little aspects that are a little more bitter and acidic than might have been appropriate for the moment. I mean, he's seen so much over the course of two millennia bouncing around the universe. You'd think that he'd be a little more willing to accept the currently unexplained, put himself to task to try and figure that out, and then accept the results as the evidence dictates. You know, but it seems like he's, you know, with the quick statements about, you know, the punching in the face bit, mm-hmm. very unusual for the Doctor to be that outwardly, you know, confrontational from the jump. I mean, granted, you don't like the guy, but
that's, I gotta say, laugh did get really grating really early on. So I'm giving him a pass on that one.
Yeah, right. But you go to the scene where they're locked up in the cell and he says, I can't wait to see you laughing as your head is rolling along the floor after being beheaded and such, or telling Alan Adale that he's got 6 months to live. Bye. I felt like it was right on the edge of being a little too callous or a little too grumpy to be the balance of the likability of the Doctor. We've had shades of a Doctor who was, you know, quick to dismiss or to check someone into their place. You know, Pertwee was a master at it because he just, you know, he had that general kind of disdain for things, but he never lost that kind of an aloof nature to it. Baker, when he realized he was not up against an intellectual equal, had fun with it, with a smile, you mm-hmm. know, there, or that twisted grin. Colin Baker would sort of go into, you know, one of his tirades, but it was never angry. It was usually just pompous, which was a little different. But this, I don't know. I'm concerned that if they don't find a way to kind of round the corners a little bit, he's just going to stay really spiky. More so than I think we had in the last two episodes. I don't feel like I got the same kind of vibe.
No, and I... All right, for our new listeners here that have just come in, to say that I have a thing against any episode penned by Mark Gatiss would... I mean, that's valid. I seriously think that that's just the way that Mark Gatiss wrote him in this episode. I don't feel like that's a consistent thing, because when you have Moffat behind him in the first two episodes, that's not how he was. Yes, he was confrontational. Yes, he had his moments where you were like, dude, did you really just say that? But he didn't have any of those moments where he was just blatantly, you know, obnoxious, I'll say.
Right.
Yeah, so I'll just put this out there. I think that this was probably one of my favorite Mark Gatiss episodes. Now, for anyone keeping score, that still puts it way down on the list.
Is it a low bar?
It's a very low bar. I mean, the last bar we had set was The Crimson Horror, and we all know how I feel about that one. But, I mean, this, if you look at this as almost like a Saturday afternoon. There's nothing else on TV. I'm just going to sit down and watch something fun. This could pass. This could be a fairly fun, just no commitment. I just want to watch something and have some fun. For what we were fed about what this series is going to be, I feel like this is completely out of character. I mean, we were told it's going to be a much darker, much grittier feel this series. You know, we started to get that in the first two episodes, and then we're thrown into Sherwood with, you know, the almost Disney version of Robin Hood. And it was like, okay, it was very jarring coming right out of Into the Dalek into this one. And then you look at the at what's coming next week and listen, and it's like, this
it's the monster under the bed.
Yeah, I mean, this does not fit. And I think that that's where a lot of my problem came from, is that I came into this expecting the tone that we had set and the tone that we were told to expect. And now it's a Saturday morning cartoon all of a sudden. I mean, the villain had, you know, he was almost cartoony. He had no real threat, no real evil. It was just like, oh, look, I'm stealing everyone's gold and working with the enemy. It's just, there was nothing.
Well, he did stab a peasant.
Yeah, and he's going to take over Nottingham. And next... Derby.
Lincoln. In the world.
Yeah, it just, it did not fit with the rest of the series that we had seen so far.
I guess it's kind of tough. If there is, there's always a need to have the occasional go on an adventure episode. You know, and this isn't the only one that we're going to have this season. I guess it'd be kind of difficult unless Phil Ford and Mark Gatiss sat there and called each other every once in a while saying, yeah, I know we're writing these out of sequence and they're probably going to be shot in a different production order, but they're going to be airing side by side. So let's do this nice little handoff so that the tone stays consistent. It's just, that's tough to do. But I understand what you're saying about the fact that we were told, you know, expect edgier, more dramatic, darker, more drawn, more carefully constructed scenes and story elements and so forth. But if you have to do one of these and you're leaving the Doctor in that dark mode, and he's the only one in the episode that's running on that track. So Clara's busy doing a fangirl thing over here. Robin is flirting with her, and yet he's still looking for Marion, but seems to forget her a lot. But that's okay. We'll just put that aside a little bit. And then we've got our robots and our megalomaniac and so forth. I guess the Doctor is kind of left in this one. I had noted that there was moments where Robin's facade slips a bit. Mm-hmm. You know, you get it in the first act. You know, Clara calls him right out on it. He's in the middle of doing his little ha, 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 and she says, you know, why are you so sad? And it cuts the legs out from under him, and he has a moment where you get to see that he's genuinely, you know, that he's going through these struggles and he has to maintain this facade and admits as much. Mm-hmm. But then he slaps it right back on and you're off and running again. There are these moments where I kind of felt like, oh, you could have gone a little farther with that. Just give it a little bit more. But we jump right back into the adventure again. Maybe there were opportunities for different cuts of this episode. I don't know.
Haley, what did you think of this episode? What was your overall impression with it?
I mean, I for the most part, I enjoyed it while I was watching it, but it's definitely my least favorite of the season so far.
Mm-hmm.
Like, some of the design I liked a lot. Like, I really liked the design of the robots in this episode. I thought they looked like something straight out of a Marvel comic, and they were really cool looking.
They were.
The mustache twirling sheriff was not quite working.
He was almost like literally at times too. It was great.
Yeah. Well, you've got a stand-up comedian who's playing a villain for the first time, I believe, in his admissions, the first time he had been given a villainous role. So doing the best he could with it. And he was tapping into some of the standards that are go-tos, you know, and workable, just maybe not on the caliber that we were hoping.
Well, I mean, but the thing is, when you think about it, though, he did kind of fit the tone of the episode. I mean, everything was a dumbed down version of what it could have been. You know, it was a bunch of, you know, hokey, cartoony. Everybody's laughing. Everybody's having fun. Even when there's, you know, robots destroying people, everyone's still, you know, able to start laughing at the drop of a hat. You know,
are y'all simple?
Planet of the Pudding Heads.
Yeah, this is all pudding heads. But yeah, I mean, but there were a lot of little elements that I think we kind of enjoyed. I think if you want to say, okay, this was in the Doctor's own admission, you know, when he first finds his way into the control room for the ship within the castle, and he says, finally, something that's real, no more fairy tales, yeah. You know, as Robin's looking around, quick, look at all this. That's a kind of a cute moment. But it's, if you're going to say, all right, this is a fairy tale episode, and that's what it is, then... And you can just accept that and say, all right, you know, as we all did, we said, okay, you know, this story is what it is and you can enjoy it. And there were some themes in here that we kind of enjoyed. What about some of the little things? There were a lot of little gifts in this episode that you can tell this is written by someone who has a long history of appreciation for the show.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's the moment when they're on the ship and he starts showing Robin, he's like, look, you're a storybook figure. And it starts flashing up, you know, the little pictures and whatnot. And then it shows a character or like a movie of it or something. The person playing Robin Hood was actually Patrick Troughton.
Oh, Troughton's rendition.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I saw that. Well, actually I've got to give credit to Nightwing. He's the one that pointed that out to me. And I went back, 'cause at that point I'll be honest with you, I'd checked out mentally. I was like, yeah, I'm paying attention.
Whatever.
Kind of. But when I went back, I was like, holy crap, that is. It's Patrick Troughton. That is great. And then we've got the reference to the miniscope.
Oh, I yelled out loud, miniscope! For those of you who are not picking up on that one, that's Carnival of Monsters. You can go ahead and watch that one on Netflix. That's a great one where everything happens within the miniscope.
Yeah.
You've got Capaldi staring at the skies going, that's it, a miniscope! And he's like, he's got it all figured out. He's going to see these giant faces staring down at him.
Yeah. So, I mean, you do have quite a few of those dropped in here, and it was fun kind of hunting those out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you mentioned that we saw evidence of his jiu-jitsu skills.
Yeah, yeah, the judo chop to disarm Robin. I was like, oh, yeah. Wow, that was Pertwee all over, wasn't it?
I was okay with the spoon fight sequence.
I was okay with it, but I thought it was kind of funny. You know, he said when the costume came out, he doesn't want people to fetishize his costume. And then he puts on a single black leather glove and fights a guy with a spoon.
And he gave him the finger as he put the glove on. Did you catch this? I
didn't notice that.
Oh, that was so blatant. I'm still wondering, though, what was he eating off the spoon in the opening
sequence? That's what I kept on. Apparently, it was like the cake or something that was wrapped in cellophane that the sheriff holds up at one point. When he's like going, I don't know what it was. It was like,
I thought it was a sandwich.
He was going through all the stuff that he'd pulled out of the doctor's pocket, which, all right, right there, you've got, we've got McCoy and Patrick Troughton. That
oh, sure.
Always had stuff in their pockets. So he's like going through, he's like, you know, all this crazy stuff in here. He holds up, it was like a cake or a block of cheese or something.
Something in cellophane, yeah.
So I'm like, okay, apparently that's what he was eating with the spoon, but I still don't know what it is. I don't know why. All right.
Badger was very upset at the fact that he was eating off the spoon, and then as he starts to climb down the stairs in the control room, he put a dirty spoon inside his lapel. Legitimate question, sir. Yeah, that's gross. That leads me to something, and I wasn't entirely certain on this. I went back and watched it a couple of times. I watched the surrounding scenes a few times to see if I could pick up on it. So Claire is getting interrogated or is doing her little reverse psychology bit on the sheriff up in his quarters, and he's got all the tools laid out and points out the screwdriver.
Mm-hmm.
We don't see the screwdriver again for 22 minutes, and it's back in the doctor's hands. How did it get there?
Yeah, that's one thing I will say. When I was talking with Nightwing after this, and he was complaining about how there seems to be a lot of scenes missing, and that's one of them. Like, how did the doctor get his screwdriver back? How did he and Robin escape from the jail cell after, you know, knocking the keys down the grate?
Oh, they picked up the thing they were chained to, and they were carrying it.
Yeah, they pulled the entire block out of the ground. But I would have loved to see them, you know, hoisting, you know, arguing with each other while they're trying to collectively pull that block out of the floor.
Yeah.
Who cleaned up Clara after they dragged her out of a stagnant
That dress
moat?
Was too fabulous to get dirty.
Her hair was perfect.
She looked fantastic in this episode. Oh, amazing dress, amazing hair. They couldn't get her dirty.
No. Nobody got dirty. They were laying on the floor of this cell.
Medieval dungeon. Yeah.
It wasn't a medieval dungeon. It was a spaceship.
Still, but there were bones. Look at the bones. There was a dead guy over in the corner, and they had just climbed up from the floor, and not a piece of straw on that perfect coat. But no, it's, so there's, yes, everything was kind of hyper-stylized for a reason. You know, things are too bright, things are too green, everyone's too clean, your teeth are too perfect, your jawline, no one has a jawline like that. You know? So, and I get that, you know, and even from the action sequences, you know, oh, you guys are really going to have the fight up on the beam over the giant bubbling cauldron. Okay, we're going to hit everything. Check, 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 check. Got it. So that's a point where you gotta reach for the big I believe button, smack it with the palm of your hand and say, yep, okay, this is the way we're going to play this game today. Yeah. I wanted some of the poignant moments to have more time. And I think I would have liked the entire episode a lot more than I do.
Yeah, you mentioned earlier the scenes where Robin's mask falls, where, you know, Clara catches him off guard and you see who he really is for a moment. And, you know, you're right. If they had shown us more of that, if they had let more of that come through, you know, either at bigger chunks at a time or a little bit more all throughout, I would have liked Robin a lot more, a lot quicker. Because as it was, by the time we got to the end, and, you know, he laughs and fires the arrow up into the air, you know, celebratory gunshot right there.
South Central.
Yeah. But, I mean, you know, as soon as he laughs at that moment, I was like, okay, yeah, no, thank God it's over because I'm done with this guy. And you very easily could have made that, you know, a non-issue.
Oh, so you missed the article where they said they were going to have him in an entire arc next season?
Okay. That's not cool. That is not cool. No, but I mean, if they had made him a person instead of a storybook character, then it would have been a lot more enjoyable.
Give him a moment where he lets the facade drop. I was kind of looking for that point right around the start of the third act so that he finally says, you know, something to the effect of, you know, you can either accept me as real or not. The fact of the matter is, you know, we got to work together to do this kind of thing. And it just seemed like they kind of came through at this moment where he was still sort of off doing his swashbuckling thing.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until the whole golden arrow, yes, I'm going to have to bring up the golden arrow bit. But that's that was where I went to reach for the I believe button, but it was on legs and ran away from me.
I had accidentally mailed it to Nottingham.
Are there other things you were saying how there were, as far as the editing goes, that you felt like there was some stuff missing? Haley, you picked up on this. I want you to spearhead this one. Marion's kiss on the doctor's cheek. What was going on there?
Right. I wish I'd written it down. I was trying to remember what she said right before she kissed him. But it was either that it was his response to being considered, you know, the hero, and that's what they were trying to play, or I wondered if it was him possibly thinking of River, who we haven't had mentioned at all this season.
I'll go stare at the transcript again, because I didn't pick up on anything as a lead-in line, because it didn't seem like his face popped until she gave him the peck on the cheek.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he puts the back of his hand to his cheek and things, and that you know, wide-eyed, gape-mouth thing. Something was supposed to be there in subtext that I just couldn't find.
Yeah, I don't know what the deal was with that. That just caught me off guard, too. I don't know. I don't think that it's anything tying into River, because that's just...
That's a long throw.
Yeah, we haven't heard anything.
Because we haven't had her... Yeah.
Although, you know, that's trying to hit a spaceship with a golden arrow from, you know, 500 yards.
Yeah. They would never do that.
I've got to ask.
It would be far too silly.
What was the deal with, you know, Robin's, or the doctor's going around and, you know, checking out all the merry men as Robin's introducing them, and we get Little John, and then out pops this little person that never gets a name.
No, was Little John. You didn't get the gag.
Okay.
The big mook standing there has no name in the credits. Little John, because I went and checked. If you go and you cross-reference the actual actor who's credited as Little John in the episode, is actually one of the Oompa Loompas from the Willy Wonka movie.
All right. So,
yeah. So, yeah, Little John was played by Rusty Goff, who was one of the Oompa Loompas in Willy Wonka, the Chocolate Factory. He was also in Flash Gordon in Star Wars.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right.
So those of you playing Six Degrees of Separation.
That threw me, because I didn't pick up on that. I'm like, okay, you know, because Little John's always the big guy. So I'm like, okay, there's Little John. Where's this guy coming from? Who's he? Why do I care?
Now you get to wonder who the big dude was. Hodor. Hodor.
Oh, that would have been great if he'd said that too.
Okay. While we're trying to figure out some stuff here, when the peasant revolt happens with the platters, and everybody realizes that they can use platters to kind of point that. By the way, Marion, kudos on the whole lock picking skills. I didn't know that she had those abilities. The robots had always been aiming at people's heads. You know, you'd see the crosshairs on their foreheads as they were about to get vaporized. And yet when they went to go fight all the robots, they just held the platters out at chest height and just kind of zapperized and, you know, played at some laser billiards to lop off robot heads.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a good thing that, you know, energy blasts don't travel at the speed of light, or that would have been a really dumb plan.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they had to make sure that they lined it up just right, focus it, just take a step back, make sure the camera's just... yeah. Long pauses on those robots for their kill strikes.
Yeah. Well, it's got to recharge, you know. Until the very end when you've got to have like 7 or 8 bolts going at the same time, then you can rapid fire them. But before that, no, you've got to recharge them every time.
I want to back up the... since we're discussing Marion and her amazing skills here... take me through the her first appearance with as Haley likes to refer to him, the red shirt peasant who ended up getting stabbed there. The sheriff says, you know, are you a newcomer to Sherwood? Mm-hmm. And she says yes before everything starts to go kind of sideways and the whole spit take move happens.
That was an excellent spit, by the way.
Yes, that was great. That was awesome.
He got a whole plume going.
It was awesome. He looked like one of those fire thrower guys at the carnival. but hasn't Marion been from this region all along? I mean, okay. I'm not sure what take on the mythology they're
maybe she's from Nottingham and this was like, you know, she just made it to Sherwood. I don't know the geography. So
see, I was thinking, you know, inserting some extra logic to make the story make sense. Things start to go sideways with the sheriff. She goes off to stay with relatives somewhere else. And this is her coming back for the first time.
Mm, okay. But that was one of those ones where you get down to the final moment, since she's like, you know, she's the little button at the end of the episode there, and a nice little feel-good gift back to Robin. I'm thinking, all right, well, I got that she's Marion, okay. And now my head's just rolling back through all of her appearances prior. And, well, wait a minute, they introduced her as just this newcomer that had stumbled in, and they decided to use her as part of the labor force, even though they never actually put her to work. They just kept tossing her to the side in the dungeons, no shackles. But never actually put her to work. She was just there to watch other people work or die.
Yeah.
Or both. Yep. Okay. Just making sure I was keeping up with it.
Yeah. And I've got to say, it's like, you know, so you find out that this is Marion. Okay. Well, I want to bring her back to Robin. Here, I tell you what. I'm going to run off here, do an errand. You stay here real quick, Robin. Okay. All right, Marion, stand right behind this box. Don't move. I don't want you to move at all. Don't worry. The box is going to go away. You just stand there for the next hour and a half until I leave.
It's going to be fine.
The whole time that they're like... She was there like the whole time they were shooting the golden arrow and everything, right? Just exactly, standing there waiting.
Yeah. That was just one of those moments. I'm like, yes, it was a cool effect. And yes, it was kind of, but really?
Really? Haley, you got a note here, Haley. It says keys. What's this?
Oh, where they're like arguing and both like, no, I'll get the keys. I'll get the keys. And then they kick them in the hole.
That was good. And they held that just long enough. So you hear him clunk, 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 clunk.
Sploosh.
Splash.
Fool of a took.
And then
it's like he's given Clara crap for not being able to pick up the screwdriver 2 episodes ago.
Well, he would have gotten it if it weren't for Robin, though. I do have to say, though, I like that part where, you know, they sit there and he's like, well, there's a bright side. Clara didn't see that.
Yeah, that's okay. If that's what you're going to realize, that's one of his only points through the episode where he realizes that he's being a little too harsh. Because, boy, if she was here, she really would give me a lot of crap for that.
I do have to say, though, the whole argument in the dungeon when they're, you know, they're saying, oh, I've got a plan. No, I've got a plan. It's like, you know, and Clara says, okay, can you tell me your plan without using the word sonic screwdriver? And he stops and she's like, see, it's always the screwdriver. I was like, okay, thank you for that, Gatiss. I appreciate that.
Yeah, even though he gave her the ability to blow up an archery target.
Yeah.
Made of
the
wood.
Arrow had a homing beacon and an incendiary head, obviously.
Yeah.
With a delayed fuse.
No, I threw that
one. No, it's just a sonic activated fuse.
Yes. It was one piece of tech that was embedded into it. So he...
There you go. Yeah. I do have to say though that whole archery thing was just, it was driving me nuts because, you know,
none of them have ever seen a bow before.
Yeah. I mean, at least like the doctor was like, oh, I cheated. You know, it's like, okay, well, his shots make sense now, bouncing it off the shoulder plate and all that stuff. Yeah.
But the no look.
the whole Hawkeye.
Shooting it from the belly button.
Exactly. It was like, it was his shoulder too. It wasn't even, it's driving me nuts.
Well, but it's still, I mean, as far as just a good kind of family romp, this is one where, you know, maybe with a little less peasant disintegration and things like that, you could sit the kids down in front of it and not have to be concerned at all. You know, they'd be able to enjoy the as Haley's great to note, the myth-busted ride down the banner with a knife.
Thank you for putting that in the notes, too. Because as soon as I saw him stick the knife in there, I'm like, no, you're going to land on your butt. You're going to break your back.
Well, no, his knife might hit a seam or something and he'd dislocate his shoulder and then fall.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. As soon as I saw that, the first thing I thought was like, I've seen this episode of Mythbusters. I know how it ends.
But that's just it. I think at that point they had made a conscious decision to say, this is just going to be a fun episode and it's going to be, you know, it's going to defy physics. It's going to defy chemistry. It's going to defy mathematics. It's going to have, you know, we're not concerned with any of those things because this is a nearly Disney-fied kind of thing. I mean, this was screaming Errol Flynn, you know.
Yeah, it really was.
Classic swashbuckler stuff. So, I guess if you're going to sit there and, you know, if you want to kind of take it apart from that standpoint, then you're really kind of in the wrong episode. There are other ones that we've had in recent past and ones that I think that we've got on deck that are going to be more of a, you know, here's ones that you can really kind of play around with, you know, the realism or the effectiveness of how certain science applies. Cause this whole thing was just a romp.
Yeah. And I mean, now that, you know, I watched it a second time and I was like, okay, I'm done. I'm not going to watch this one again. And I likely won't, but at the same time, now going back through it and just looking at it from that viewpoint of this is just meant to be complete slapstick, over the top, nothing serious about it, fun.
Yeah, it's hyper stylized. Yeah,
you know, I can appreciate it for what it is a lot more. It's just the fact that I wasn't prepared for that going in. I wanted something more substantial, and I was cheated of that is how I felt when I was watching it. I was like, this is not what I was told for months that I was going to be getting, you know, and it just happened to be the fact that it was a Gatiss episode. So instantly I wrote it off. So,
well, you know, I'm going to force you to eat a little bit of crow. You did like Cold War.
Yeah. No. And like I said, this was one of my favorite Gatiss episodes.
Okay.
And, you know, I'm not saying absolute top but Gatiss episodes still rank relatively low for me. Even, I mean, yes, Cold War was a cool like throwback to the Ice Warriors and stuff, but I mean, that's the thing. When Gatiss is writing horror, he knows what he's doing. That's why I've kind of felt sad that he's not the one behind next week.
Yeah,
because I was like, that he would have been absolutely brilliant there. I mean, granted, it is Moffat, so chances are we are going to wind up with another, you know, Weeping Angel silent style horrible monster that just preys on our innate fears, but I still think that Gatiss would have been good at that.
This isn't going to be the episode where we get the that hammerhead looking alien yet, right? That
no, shows I think, up a little later. I think that one is from Time Heist, if I'm thinking properly.
Okay. But, so, yeah. So now we've got Creatures Under the Bed. So this is kind of like the pace between what we had last season with Hyde that came right on the heels of, oh, God, back me up here.
Was it Cold War? It was Cold War.
I think that might have aired right after Cold War. So, yeah.
So apparently you get a Gatiss episode and then you get a really scary one.
Yeah.
Apparently that's how we're doing it now. Or, you know, an attempt at a scary one, I should say.
Before I let this go, what kept that thing stuck on Clara's forehead?
The fabulousness of her hair.
I mean, she looked phenomenal through the entire episode, even at times when she shouldn't have looked as phenomenal, and that's okay, but she had a little forehead thing, and all I could think of was the hologram symbol from Red Dwarf. So she had that on her forehead, and the chains that were looped through her hair, so her hair wasn't holding up. They glued that sucker right to her forehead, and it ended up just jamming, and it had to be watertight because she went in a moat. So what?
Came out with it still on.
She got it from the TARDIS. She used like a Gallifreyan adhesive
or staple gun.
One of the two.
No, it had a little gravity generator, and it locked onto that one spot on her forehead.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, it looked good, so I didn't care.
Time and relative dimension on forehead.
Yes. Tardif.
Tardoff. I've just got to say this. It could be a lot of fun. There were some missteps. I would have liked a little bit more explanation on a few things. But all in all, it was a Saturday morning cartoon.
Yeah, and for those folks who chimed in with us and said that they really enjoyed the fact that this was a classic style episode, I absolutely agree. Absolutely. Because obviously for 90% of it, it really was pulled from a couple of classic episodes. And it's a formula that works because a lot of people really appreciate the breaks occasionally from the really heavy, ponderous stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Ponderous. just to be able to have a little escape. And that's great. And I fully appreciate that. And I absolutely emphatically agree. What's some of the feedback that we had gotten that people had specifically said about the episode in retrospect?
Well, we got an email from Bobby Honeycutt who said, "I enjoyed the episode. Throwing in the Promised Land reference made the episode valid from a story arc standpoint. I love the Enlightenment wordplay. Apparently, the Doctor is looking for spirituality or something. I think he's referring to when he says he doesn't want the Golden Arrow, and they ask him what does he want, and he says Enlightenment. Mm-hmm. I took that to mean that he wanted to know the plan." But I guess you can take it further than that if you want to.
Sure.
He said, in deep breath, he says he may never reach the Promised Land. Into Dalek, he says that he can't see the Doctor's soul, or that the Dalek says that he can see the Doctor's soul, and that he can see divinity. And in Robots of Sherwood, the Doctor says he wants enlightenment. Was that also a nod to the Peter Davison serial?
I didn't quite pick up on that connection.
No.
I think this is really a matter of the way that they're starting to paint this Promised Land premise is interesting, because you'll notice that the individuals who are actively seeking it are inhuman.
Yeah.
And they're all from the future going to the Earth in the past.
Yeah, yeah. I'd say actually they're robotic.
Yeah.
It's always been the robotic ones. The only one that we've seen has something to do with that isn't explicitly was the girl from last week that sacrificed herself.
Right. You can end up there.
Yeah.
But she wasn't seeking it.
Or it could be that she was actually a duplicate. I mean, they never said she wasn't.
She was a robot too, because obviously the Doctor's not sure about his ability to identify a robot.
Yeah, apparently. Then Rum Daddy wrote in, and he said, "Last night's Robin Hood episode was one of the best that I've seen in a long time. I felt that Capaldi's voice as the Doctor was finally being heard. The pacing and the wit was a direct throwback to the Tom Baker years. Mm-hmm. It was fun and silly and serious only when it needed to be, without dwelling on it for too long. Claire was finally treated with the right tone, stepping it up a notch from last week. The scene in the dungeon was classic Who at its best. This is the Clara I really can get behind. It always bugged me when she said, when she had more confidence than a character 2,000 years old, but her use of common sense and understanding who the Doctor is and using it felt like a better compliment. Keep up the good work, and as always, listen to Haley." Yeah, sure.
Did she say something?
I don't know specifically what he's talking about, but yes, always listen to me.
Because right. She's not going to say much, so when she does speak...
It's worth it. She saves it up.
Tune in. Okay, so I want to take this apart here. He says, as far as... It bothered him when she played off having more confidence than a character 2,000 years old. I guess it really depends on which mindset of the Doctor she's particularly bouncing off of. If it was a matter of, we're talking about Smith and his 2,000-year-old Doctor, and saying, because his way of handling his culmination of years and all his amassed knowledge was always right behind all the hand-waving and floor-sliding.
Mm-hmm.
So that wasn't necessarily confidence so much as it was a visual distraction that he was putting up, this kind of a smokescreen of silliness while he was working things out under the hood. So if her confidence now stands out because she's dealing with a Doctor who's often doing his own thing and doesn't necessarily want to have someone at his side all the time, "I'll come back for you when I need you," or "you'll see me again when the time is right," and he just runs off and does his own thing, then she's left to her own devices. Or in this case, she's taken out of the cell.
Mm-hmm.
And is interrogated on her own, and she gets a chance to kind of shine on her own. I definitely agree that I like to see that, her being left to use her wits. And as Haley was saying back when we were talking about the first episode of this series, you know, we're getting to enjoy her more because now we know, we have a better understanding and a consistency of who it is that we're watching and appreciating here. We don't have to worry about these questions anymore about, you know, which version is this? What skill set does she have? You know, which personality traits is she bringing into it this time? Mm-hmm. Is she going to die and get reset? So, yeah, I mean, we've been consistently pleased with what they're doing with her. We still don't have any kind of official confirmation that she's going to tap out at the end of the season, right? It's still not officially.
No,
official.
Not yet.
No, it's still rumor.
So,
here's hoping.
But I mean, I remember I had this a quick text conversation with Badger about this, and he was saying, you know, it's really kind of unfortunate that they're building her up just to kind of take her away at the end of the season, if that's what they end up doing. And I thought about it for a second, and I came back and said, you know, I would rather they do that than leave her two dimensional for the entire season and don't give us someone that we can actually appreciate when it's all said and done.
Yeah, I mean, my biggest thing was I hope that they had found out early enough that they could kind of work her exit into it instead of, hey, look how awesome she's getting throughout this whole series and Christmas special, she's gone. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was wanting them to kind of lead into her exit if that is what's going to happen. Now that I've actually seen a few episodes and I'm seeing what her character is becoming, I'm hoping that her saying, you know what, depending on how the fans react this series, I might leave after the Christmas special. Let's see how they react to series 8. And once she realizes, hey, everybody loves this Clara, that she'll be willing to stay on for a little bit.
Hedging her bets.
Hopefully.
Huh. Oh, so she's not going to go run off with Danny Pink and...
Well, apparently we're going to get some story on him next week.
A story on him and his beard.
And his fro.
But, is this going to be a kissing episode? Or a crying
episode?
Who could
blame her? Have you seen Danny Pink?
Oh, yeah. So next week we do have the episode Listen coming up, which, as we've said before, it looks like it's going to be one of those horror kind of things that the hide behind the couch, Moffat plans on scarring everybody again. So I'm looking forward to this one. I think it could be a lot of fun.
Yeah, very much so. We were talking about some little Easter eggs and moments here, some of the things that have been kind of tapped in. I think I might have to check last episode, but we've now switched the closing credits. The style of the closing credits as well. They're now done as title cards rather than a scroll.
Yeah, no, that's the way it's been this whole series so far.
Has it? I must have just picked up on it this time around, but I'm cool with them switching back to that now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they started that with Deep Breath, and they've kept it going. So apparently, that's what's going to stick. They did change the intro sequence a little bit now. When the TARDIS pops up the first time, you see kind of like a almost like a nebulous wave come out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's
that pulse.
Yeah. Which kind of works. I liked it. So. Mm-hmm. But I mean, that makes me wonder, are they not done with this yet? Are they going to continually change it just little bit by little bit?
Yeah.
So we do have some news this week, though. The first one being that apparently Capaldi has been named GQ's TV Personality of the Year.
Yes. This is not like giving Barack Obama the Nobel Peace Prize after he's just been elected.
Mm.
This is a little bit more established here,
right?
Because it's tapping into not only his all of the media blitz that they've given him for his role as the Doctor, but also his Tucker character within the thick of it, the work that he did in the film Into the Loop, and obviously the most recently prior to the Doctor, the Three Musketeers,
right?
It's Cardinal Richelieu.
Yeah, so that's kind of cool. I mean, it's drawing attention to the show. Yeah, the fact that here's this guy that's been in two episodes and he's getting this big award. So anything that gets publicity for the show, really.
Oh yeah, but, yeah. And he looked dashing.
Yes. And then, you know, we did mention that in this episode, there were a number of scenes that we would have liked to see or felt that there was something that got cut. But one thing that they did mention that did get cut, apparently towards the end of the episode, there was going to be a scene where a decapitation happened. And the BBC decided that in respect for the two journalists that were executed, they were going to cut that scene out. They just completely removed the scene, said, you know, it's, it could be insensitive for the families of the journalists that were killed. So we don't want to put it in there. I mean, I wholly applaud them for doing that. That was definitely the best choice. That was the right thing to do. I mean, now granted, had I been sitting here and watching that, I don't know that I'd have been like, holy crap, I can't believe they put that in there after this whole thing just happened. But yeah, there are people that would make that correlation. So with something as sensitive as that, I think that they definitely did make the right choice there.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Then they, who was it? Doctor Who TV actually got a hold of the scene, or they put out what the scene actually was. So if you want to know, you can listen. If not, go ahead and you can check out here if you are drawing a correlation there.
Jump ahead 60 seconds. Yeah. Just give us 60 seconds here.
All right. So in the original version, there's the sword fights going on. Robin gets knocked down. It looks like the sheriff is putting the sword to his throat, and then the doctor jumps in and throws a tapestry over the sheriff and giving Robin the chance to get away. Robin comes back up and chops the sheriff's head off. And that's when the head starts talking, and apparently the robot ship crashed on the sheriff and they rebuilt him as part robot. Right. And then so he gets up and gets his head back, and then the fight commences and they jump up on the beam, and that's where we picked it up. So that kind of gives light to that whole line that he said of, you know, I'm the first of a new breed, half man, half machine. Mm-hmm. It's like, when I first watched it, I was like, I don't know where that's coming from.
But not imperative, I think, to the episode in total.
Oh, and no,
I think,
no, no.
As you said, I think having that omitted was perfectly both a correct decision and did not have any overall impact on the enjoyability of the episode.
Yeah, so. I mean, you wouldn't know, aside from that one line, you wouldn't know at all that anything had been cut out. And with everything else that seemed to just pop up out of nowhere, that one line can go without notice, so... but we also have some ratings news for this episode. It actually got 5.2 million on the overnights, which is actually the exact same number as last week's Into the Dalek.
Okay. So we're holding it strong.
Cool. It did come in second to the night second to the day for X Factor. So apparently that's a thing still.
Wow.
Yeah. Into the Dalek actually got up to 7.29 at the final count for the week. So 5.2 is, you know, not definitely a number to stick with. So we'll see how this does over the week and with all the recordings taken in.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I mean, still pretty, I mean, really high numbers were, I mean, we got 9 million with the premiere, and then, you know, 7 million for last week. We're probably looking about the same ballpark for this one. So it's really solid numbers.
Yeah, yeah. This is going to be an extremely strong season throughout. I really hope that it stays consistent because of the fact that we know that we're doing a constant airing schedule, no break, which I think is absolutely going to work in their favor.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, definitely.
We'll get through the end of the series and then have a couple weeks and then Christmas special.
So. No hints of any of the little additional material they were promising us for this season, as far as little webisodes, little trailers, little, you know, intro segments or you know, codas or anything.
I really have to wonder if they weren't alluding to the red button stuff that they've been doing. You know, because every week for each episode, there has been a, you know, kind of like making of thing or a behind the scenes on Red Button, which, hey, can't access here in the States, but you know, it's there.
Yep.
So I don't know. Apparently I've heard a couple people complaining about them saying, oh, the narrator on them is just way too, you know, cartoony. just
get like, Colin Baker.
We know he's good. Come on.
Proven.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, I haven't actually had a chance to see him, obviously. So I don't know how good they are or what, if they, there's anything of quality in there. If it's just, hey, look, we got extra film stock laying around. Give it to these guys. Put it somewhere. All right. So you guys have anything else closing up?
No, I mean, this, I think if you gave this one watch and you're still a little uncertain, I'd say give it another go. Make sure you hang the sign over the door there that says, you know, we're telling a story. inside, you know, because we're all stories in the end. Do that and you'll be able to appreciate it. For all the people that were gushing over it, I still say watch it again so that you can pull some questions out of it, because there is no such thing as a Moffat or a Gatiss episode that don't have something in there that you're supposed to walk away with going, and kind of tumble around with. Whether it's the Promised Land thing or whatever it is that you want to take out of it, or something that the Doctor threw off as an aside that has you kind of, you know, mentally chewing on, do that. That's what this is all about. This is one of the things that we love about the show.
Yeah, I do have to say, if I do wind up going back and watching this one again, I'm going to watch a few episodes of Looney Tunes to begin with, watch this episode, chase it with Rugrats, and then form an opinion.
Watch Men in Tights. And because apparently Tom Riley took a lot of his acting from this, go watch Princess Bride so that you can just pick up on Wesley, because it's basically Gary Elvis.
Or just watch Princess Bride instead.
There's that too.
Just point your screwdriver in front of the screen every once in a while you're watching Princess Bride.
All right, well, this has been episode 102 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, like I said, my box.
And this is Kier saying, if you were real, you'd be dead in 6 months.
And this is Haley saying, heroes get remembered, but legends never die.
We'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. We love getting feedback from listeners, so don't hesitate to share your thoughts with us. You can email us at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com, tell us on Twitter @GallifreyRadio, or on Facebook at facebook.com/GallifreyPublicRadio. You can also leave us a voicemail for inclusion in future shows by calling 210-802-1477. That's 210-802-1477 to leave us a voicemail. You can head to GallifreyPublicRadio.com to leave comments on each episode. There you can also keep up to date on all the latest news and gossip, as well as what's going on in the community. Also, make sure to head over to GunnaGeek.com to find out lots of other high-quality, geek-centric shows. Music by Beyond the Epilogue and Retcon Addict.
Gallifrey Public Radio is copyright 2014.